discuss from the seventh canto, chapter 7, what Prahlad learned in the womb, text 42. Sukhaya,
Sukhaya,
Dukha,
Dukha,
Mokshaya,
Mokshaya,
Sankalpa,
Sankalpa,
Iha,
Iha,
Karminaha,
Karminaha,
Sada,
Sada,
Apnati,
Apnati,
Ihaya,
Ihaya,
Dukham,
Dukham,
Anihaya,
Anihaya,
Sukhapritaha,
Sukhapritaha.
Sukhaya, Dukha, Mokshaya,
Sukhaya, Dukha, Mokshaya,
Sukhaya, Dukha, Mokshaya,
Sukhaya, Dukha, Mokshaya,
Sankalpa, Iha, Karminaha,
Sankalpa, Iha, Karminaha,
Sada, Apnoti, Haya, Dukham,
Sada, Apnoti, Haya, Dukham,
Anihaya, Sukhaprita,
Anihaya, Sukhaprita.
Gracious Prabhupada. In this material nature, every materialist desires to achieve happiness and diminish his distress, and therefore he acts accordingly. Actually, however, one is happy as long as one does not endeavor for happiness. As soon as one begins his activities for happiness, his conditions of distress begin. Please repeat after me. In this material world,
every materialist
desires to achieve happiness and diminish his distress, and therefore he acts accordingly. Actually, however,
one is happy.
As long as one does not endeavor for happiness. As soon as one begins his activities for happiness,
his conditions of distress begin.
Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Every conditioned soul is bound by the laws of material nature, as described in Bhagavad Gita, Prakriti Kriyamanani Gunai Karmani Sarvasaha. Everyone has achieved a certain type of body given by material nature according to the instructions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Ishvara Sarva Bhutanam Riddeshe Arjuna Tishthati Brahmayam Sarva Bhutani Jantarurha. The Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart, O Arjuna, and is directing the wanderings of all living entities who are seated as on a machine made of the material nature. Bhagavad Gita 18:61. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Super Soul, is present in everyone's heart, and as the living entity desires, the Lord gives him facilities with which to work according to his ambitions in different grades of bodies. The body is just like an instrument by which the living entity moves according to false desires for happiness and thus suffers the pangs of birth, death, old age and disease in different standards of life. Everyone begins his activities with some plan and ambition. But actually, from the beginning of one's plan to the end, one does not derive any happiness. On the contrary, as soon as one begins acting according to his plan, his life of distress immediately begins. Therefore, one should not be ambitious to dissipate the unhappy conditions of life, for one cannot do anything about them. Ahamkaro bimuratma karta hamiti manate. Although one is acting according to false ambition, he thinks he can improve his material conditions by his activities. The Vedas enjoin that one should not try to increase happiness or decrease distress. for this is futile. Tashaiva heta prayateta kovida. One should work for self-realization, not for economic development, which is impossible to improve. Without endeavor, one can get the amount of happiness and distress for which he is destined, and one cannot change this. Therefore, it is better to use one's time for advancement in the spiritual life of Krishna consciousness. One should not waste his valuable life as a human being. It is better to utilize this life for developing Krishna consciousness without ambition or so-called happiness. So, it's a very nice instruction by Prahlad Maharaj. Prahlad Maharaj was telling his friends, his classmates in the ashram of Shanda and Amarka. When the teachers were gone to do their household, to take care of their household business, Prahlad Maharaj got his classmates together and he started to give this instruction. Actually, all these instructions are very, very important, and this one specifically. Prahlad Maharaj is actually pointing out that in this material world, every materialist desires to achieve happiness and diminish his distress, and therefore he acts accordingly. Actually, however, one is happy as long as one does not endeavor for happiness. As soon as one begins his activities for happiness, his conditions of distress begin. Did everyone understand the translation? Hare Pandit. Can you tell me what Prahlad Maharaj is saying in this verse?
He's saying that materialists in the material world, they want to diminish their suffering and increase their happiness. But Prahlad said that it's better if we don't endeavor to become happy.
Yeah. Prahlad Maharaj is saying that one is happy as long as one doesn't endeavor for happiness. As soon as one begins to endeavor for happiness, then the distress becomes suffering. So, does everybody agree with Prahlad Maharaj? But can you give me some personal? You agree with this statement? No? No? Why?
Because without endeavor, nothing gets accomplished. Without work, nothing.
Yeah, but you have to understand that Prahlad Maharaj is a Mahajan.
I am not.
So you should just accept the words of the Mahajan. What is Prahlad Maharaj saying? That one is happy as soon as one doesn't endeavor for happiness. But as soon as one begins his endeavor for happiness, suffering. So do you agree with that? Then what is the problem?
Well, that as a spirit soul one has to be active. So it's just to withdraw from hankering after happiness, I mean, this is not the solution.
Very good. But the thing is that he's not saying to withdraw from happiness. He's saying one should endeavor for happiness. And living entity is active. Living entity, this conscious being, this spirit soul is always active. But how should he become active?
By serving Krishna.
The only purpose of our ability to act is to serve Krishna for his pleasure. But if that ability to act is directed towards our sense gratification, endeavor for happiness means sense gratification. Giving pleasure to the senses. But But as soon as one starts that, then immediately it begins. Immediately it becomes, starts to become visible. Priyavrata, can you tell us why when one makes an endeavor for sense gratification or happiness, he becomes miserable?
Because it is not satisfied in this material world, no matter how much he gets.
Very good.
So he's endeavoring for happiness. Mm. And really disillusioned to think that he's going to get happiness by endeavoring.
Very good. Very good. Actually, the moment we start to endeavor for happiness, what actually happens? We set a standard. If I get this, then I must be happy. Or in order to become happy, I must get this. But by the time he gets that, first of all, even if he gets it, after making all the endeavors, by that time, his desire has changed. Like, we can imagine, like, when you are a child, when you are children, you desire so many things. Like, can you remember something?
You want to become pilot?
You want to become pilot when you are a child. Okay. Now, first, did you make any endeavor?
Only in desire.
Only in desire. Okay, then we can say, for example, if, say, Sachidula made an endeavor to become a pilot, and he became a pilot, could he be satisfied? Would he have been satisfied?
I don't think so.
Are all the pilots in the world satisfied? No. At that time, say, if he became a pilot, then his plan would change. Like recently in India, the pilots went on a strike. They are not getting enough salary. So like that, you know, in the material platform, one doesn't become satisfied with what he gets. Therefore, Prahlad Maharaj is actually saying that don't make an endeavor for your happiness, but instead become happy with what you have got. That is the secret of becoming happy. So making an endeavor for happiness means I'm not satisfied with what the situation that I'm in now. But I must be in that situation in order to become happy. But when he gets into that situation, he doesn't become happy. Then he wants to be something else. Like, you know, there is a saying, there is a song actually, which I heard when I was a child. It's an English song. I don't know who sang it out. Long time. This poor man wants to be a rich man. And a rich man wants to be a king. Isn't it? A poor man wants to be a rich man. But when a poor man becomes rich man, then does he become satisfied? Then he's not happy with just becoming a rich man. He wants to be the king. But then it says like something like, the one who has nothing, he is actually the real happiness. But the one who has, anyway, it goes something like that. But the point is that our material desire is never satisfied. Our material desire will never be satisfied. Right? Someone is in college or studying, he thinks that after he comes out of his college, he wants to get a job. Then he gets a job. At that time, his plan is, or his idea is, if I get a job, as an engineer or a doctor, it will be so nice. But when he gets the job, then he sees that just getting the job is not enough. He has other demands. He wants more money, and even if he has a lot of money, then his plans are different. He wants something else. In this way, in the material nature, one always keeps on endeavoring for something else. In this respect, Tagore has a very nice statement in a poem, in one of his poems. It says, the refrain is, Heta noi, heta noi, onno kotha, onno kono khane. Not here, somewhere else. Like that's what everybody is actually feeling. Not here, I'm not happy here. My happiness is somewhere else, but he doesn't know where that somewhere else is. So this is how Prahlad Maharaj is instructing his friend that if you really want to become happy, don't make any endeavor for your happiness. Then what should he do, Balaram Das?
We should use our energy to serve Krishna.
Yeah. And Malati, you want to add something? Yes, self-realization is perfect. Yeah, the main point actually is to be happy where we are. Just see how wonderful it is, the situation that we are in. It's so wonderful. Do you feel that? Suhasini? Are you happy here? Will you be happy when you go back to Basel?
Yes.
Subhadra? Actually, that's more we can realize that. That you see, there are two things. One is, there are two types of people. One is called optimist. What's the difference between them?
I'm saying that it's like the glass is half full, the optimist is half full, and the pessimist is half empty.
So optimist is one who sees the brighter side, and the pessimist is one who looks at the darker side. Right? As you said, very nicely. That. If the glass is half full, then optimist says it's half full, pessimist says half empty. Similarly, to see the brighter side of it, like, can you think of so many brighter sides? Priyavrata. Now, say let's consider now, right?
That we are so fortunate that we have been given this human birth. We don't need use of property.
Can you think of some bright
stuff? That in Manika, we in Manika we're getting your association.
Balaram? Think of some bright stuff. Yeah, but give us some verbal expression. To see the brighter side means to think how much worse it could have been. Right? Like once, you know, very vivid example I can give is that, you know, the Third World War didn't begin. You know, the war is, we are at least living in a peaceful world. If the nuclear war begins, you know, what would be our condition? How much worse it would be? Can you imagine how much worse it would be? There won't be any food to eat. There will be continuous anxiety, like, you know, any moment, you know, some nuclear warhead may just fall. I mean, compared to how much worse it could have been, one can see how much nicer it is now. Another consideration is we are still alive. We are alive, we are breathing. We have practically everything in abundance. There's plenty of food to eat. Plus, on top of everything, you know, we have the association of devotees. There are, we are getting the opportunity to serve in ISKCON. And ISKCON is actually spreading. This line, can you give some ideas?
Mm-hmm. You could have changed your plans and not come here.
Yes.
Flight could have, I don't know.
Yes, that's so many things. Sachidula?
You could have decided to not get Bhagavatam class now.
Can you think of something very nice that you are feeling now? Or, huh? You are happy to be here? Why are you happy to be here? Okay, so in this way, a devotee always sees the brightest side. And that's why devotees. And in this way, a devotee finds, no matter what, in whatever situation a devotee is, he has always sees the brightest side. So, for example, as I was saying, that if there was a war, the situation could be so much worse. But now let us imagine, you know, we are at a time when there is a, when the Third World War began. What should you do? Should you become miserable because the war is going on? No, even in the middle of a war, one should, devotee feel happy. Because he always sees that there is so much service he can render to Krishna. So devotee's happiness doesn't actually depend on the surrounding atmosphere. Devotee's happiness is in rendering service to Krishna. Therefore, a time may come when there will be a war and the whole world will be absolutely chaotic condition. I remember a long time ago I saw one movie. As a devotee I actually saw it. It's called The Day After. Day After. And that actually gives a very, very vivid picture of it. What's it going to be like? I remember one scene. Some people were just, I think they were preparing some food or something after the nuclear holocaust. And some other people came and just killed them. They got into some argument, they didn't want to give the food or something. Just killed them. And that's how desperate people will become at that time. At that time, to have even food Like nowadays, if somebody is carrying a lot of money, his life can be in danger. At that time, if you have just some handful of food, your life can be in danger. Now, at a time like that, it's going to be really difficult. But what should a devotee do? Even at a time like that, because the devotee will see that now is the time to preach to them about Krishna. And that also gives me an insight, like from just as I was thinking about that scene, that devotees actually have to be very, very selfless. Devotees should be free from all possessions. Because at a time like that, we'll be the real test. If a devotee doesn't care for his position, but gives Krishna consciousness out to people, then people will need it. At a time like that. But if people see that the devotees are grabbing for their security, for their future need, then people will lose confidence. People will not take them seriously. Therefore, devotees have to be very, very selfless. The last bit that we have, we should just try to give it out to others. That is the meaning of sacrifice. Sacrifice means giving it out for others' benefit. And the devotee's life is based. But still, the ultimate issue, devotees have to become completely detached. Especially at a time of crisis, devotees should be completely selfless and offer everything that they have. Because after all, there is no guarantee, no security in this world besides Krishna's lotus feet. Like, we may store our food, but for how long? We may make plans for our future, but for how long? Can we store enough for our future? And even if we store enough, we have to use it. It's not that if we have a lot of food, one, in spite of having so much, people are dying. Is it that the millennials don't die? The millennials also die. And actually, when we become attached, then it becomes very difficult at the time of death. The more attached we are, the more painful. And since we are preparing for our death, we should actually become detached. And whatever we have, must engage in it. At least, that is the Bhakti Bhakti. At least the fact that we have to practice. Give out, give up. Sacrifice whatever our position. Ultimately, we have to even sacrifice. That's what Prahlad Maharaj actually explains in the next life, next verse. It's a very nice verse also. The living entity desires comfort for his body and makes many plans for his purpose. Makes many plans for this purpose. But actually, the body is the property of others. This body is not our property. This body also is others' property. Whose property this body is?
Belongs to Krishna.
Yes, true. But Prahlad Maharaj is actually making another point. He is saying, indeed, the perishable body embraces the living entity and then lives in the heart. Okay. Yeah, Prabhupada is actually explaining the point. Who does this body belong to? Everyone desires comfort for his body and tries to make a suitable situation for his body, forgetting that the body is meant to be eaten by dogs, jackals, and moths, and thus turned into useless tool, ashes, or earth. His body belongs to dogs and jackals and worms. Or fire. Some people burn their body. Who does the body belong to? For them, the body belongs to fire. Those who bury the body, what happens after the body is buried? The body is actually eaten by worms. And if the body is not buried, if it is lying, then the vultures and dogs. So this is what this body, this is the body's ultimate destiny is. That's why Prahlad Maharaj is saying the body actually doesn't belong to us. This body belongs to somebody else. Can you feel the depth of this statement? Sachidula?
Feel.
Can you feel?
I can understand.
Balaram? That's why it's so important that one studies Srimad Bhagavatam. The knowledge becomes so clear from Srimad Bhagavatam. Look at this materialistic people, they're making so many. Or enjoyment. They're so busy with their body. The men are building up their body to build up their muscles. And the women are trying to make themselves beautiful. So in this way, everyone is trying to lead a life centered around their body. Plane rides sometimes make this awareness so clear. The other day when I was flying, that flight from Los Angeles to New York, just across the aisle next to my seat, there was a young girl. Sure, she must have been very, there was some French group actually, they were from France, they were speaking French. A bunch of young boys. And they were tired, they must have, flown in from Paris, and then they were flying to New York. I don't know where they came from anyway. They all looked very tired. And this girl, throughout the flight she was sleeping. But as soon as the plane was about to land, she pulled out her, the cosmic lips and started to beautify herself. And I was wondering, why make so much endeavor to make oneself look beautiful? Because I don't know, anyway, maybe my visions are different. And this is what the materialistic people are like. And also, men, they are trying to build up their body, go to gym. But they don't realize that all these activities actually are making them more and more attached to the body. whereas the goal of life is to become detached. They don't realize that how much misery they're actually inviting. And everyone wants to look good, look beautiful, but they don't realize that the ultimate beauty is the beauty of the soul. When the soul is beautiful, then no matter what the body looks like, others will see, others will feel, think that he is so beautiful, others will see him to be very beautiful. Like often I hear people say that Prabhupada is so beautiful. Although he was an old man, at the age of 80, no one was beautiful. On the other hand, I notice in the West, when they're young, they look so handsome. But when they become old, they look so terrible. And whereas Prabhupada was at the age of 80, he looked so beautiful. But not that everyone saw Prabhupada as beautiful. Only some who had the eyes, who had spiritual inclination, they saw Prabhupada as very beautiful. Materialistic eyes, the gross materialistic people will not see the beauty in that sense. Anyway, to come back to the point of happiness, I also feel very happy to be back. Association of devotees are very special, and on top of everything I also feel that naturally the relationship between spiritual master and disciple is a very special relationship. I was feeling very happy to be back, and I was remembering one statement by Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada once mentioned to a group of his disciples that it was actually good that he left his wife and children behind, left home. He said, I left three children. But because of that, today I've got so many children. Prabhupada was meaning his disciples. And yes, spiritual master actually feels like a father towards his disciples. Feels concerned and protective and worried at the same time. Way, we see that in Krishna consciousness we don't actually miss anything. We get everything in a better way. We leave our family, but we get a coming to a family which actually is so much better, so much sweeter than our original so-called materialistic family. You feel that you're high and you miss your family. Does everybody feel that? Subhadra, do you feel happy in the family of Krishna consciousness?
I never miss my family. It's just you that I feel some kind of death to them, but it's not that I'm missing them.
You feel some depth in what? Or debt. Indebtedness. Okay. Suhasini, you must be tired.
Yeah.
Are you tired? Then why did he come? He could have taken, could have slept somewhere. So be happy in Krishna consciousness. This is how actually we get a taste of spiritual world. ISKCON must represent the spiritual world. Therefore, ISKCON should be in such a way that whenever somebody comes to ISKCON, we get to realize what the spiritual world actually is. That means everyone in ISKCON should feel so happy that whoever comes in contact with ISKCON will feel that if ISKCON, if in this material world they can create such a divine atmosphere, then how wonderful it will be in the spiritual world. And this divine atmosphere will be created will happen only when there is there due to the loving exchange between the devotees. The devotees should feel in such a way, and devotees must reciprocate with each other in such a way that the whole atmosphere is filled with joy. And we all have to work towards that, to achieve that. And if we just follow Srila Prabhupada's instructions, it will happen. Prabhupada gives so many instructions. I just remember one instruction is Prabhupada used to say that whoever comes to the temple must get prasad. And he wanted to cook, have preparations for 20 people ready, all the time. And when this 20 people, one lot is finished, 20 people came and took prasad, then should cook for another 20 people. In this way, there should be continuous supply of prasad. And if we do that, then people's attitude towards us will become so favorable. Or, in a way, we, in order to act like that, or in order to make arrangements like that, we have to be very, very personal. That we must feel for the people those who are coming. And we should always have prasadam for 20 people ready, and as soon as they come, if people come and get some prasad, and what should we serve? Prabhupada gave the menus. We should have sabjis, two types of sabji. One halwa, or some sort of sweet, say halwa, and puri. And the puri dough should be prepared ready, and as soon as we have people come, we should roll up the puri, fry it, and serve it hot. But can you imagine if people come to our temple and get that kind of treatment, you know, sit them up nicely, you know, serve them prasad, puri, sabji, halwa. And by the time they finish taking prasad, we don't even have to preach to them. Like that has done, I mean, that must have taken care of their completely. They'll be completely satisfied. And then whatever we tell them, they'll be ready to do. So, when you all, I mean, in this way you take care of people, either in your preaching center or in a temple, wherever you are. Make arrangements like that. It will of course mean some more, some extra work for Subhasini. In Basel, and some extra work for Radharani.
May I ask them? As you like my last statement, last over discussion,
Unfortunately, it's not been practiced in many temples, Maharaj.
Not anymore.
It's very sad.
And we just, food distribution, we just do the food for life. And that also, our heart is, you know, like all the food for life is going on. Our heart is not really food for life. We just get some people to do some, you know, cooking and go out and be that. Like we do not really put ourselves into that program. Often food for life program is undertaken by devotees who are not really that important in the temple. Unless, of course, like in some areas, some temples are exceptional. Like, for example, Durban. Kapila is doing a wonderful job. And it's taken seriously. But still, you know, more input could be given in all temples, actually. And that's what I was saying, like, our attitude is often very impersonal. The food for life distribution is kind of, you know, it's very impersonal. But, you know, like, this kind of dealing, this kind of giving out prasad is very personal. Sitting down, sitting them down. Like in Los Angeles, some people came to see me. And I got the prasad, and some of them, the plate was quite big. So they wanted another extra plate and took a little bit of prasad from there. And they were very, not only important people, but they were very nice people. And I didn't take prasad at that time. So I was insisting that they take more. And I started to serve them. And they were so, you know, like later on I got to know that they became so moved that I personally felt the prasad. You know, and these kind of, you know, little exchanges, you know, little, I mean, goes a long way. Also, you know, there is such a shortage of devotees. You know, we unfortunately, you know, like we got drifted away from Prabhupada's ideas to some extent. And as a result of that, this problem. You see, I tell you, like, how our problem started. You see, when Prabhupada was on this planet, his main program was for distribution. But later on, you know, some devotees felt that our devotees are going out to distribute books. So let them sell some records, music records. What happened is, in America, you can buy this old stock of music. Like they print, you know, when they cut the disc, you know, they print a lot of them. You know, they cut a lot of this, like, and they just pile up in the warehouse. And then at some point, they just sell them at a very low cost. They're not, you know, big musicians. But, you know, like, in some music, maybe, you know, say, some famous singer, some guitarist played the guitar. And they, you know, like, started to sell, you know, this is his record. Say, you know, Paul McCartney. He may have just, you know, did something, but you know, they started to inform, you know, like the Beatles. And not only they started to sell this paraphernalia, but they started to lie. This is how actually Kali started to enter. To cripple Prabhupada's ISKCON. So first it was records, and these records were, they sell for 2 cents, 2.5 cents each. And our devotees were selling it for $2. So a lot of money started coming in, because, you see, we had already a sales, you know, force. But it's why they should sell books, let them sell these also. The sales force is already there. As a result of that, a lot of money started to come in. Then they started to sell paintings. Some devotee found, it happened in Canada, that there are some warehouses where they get Hong Kong paintings. And these paintings cost very cheap. And I even went to those warehouses, huge warehouses with stacks of paintings. And from Hong Kong, they sell them for $5, $10, depending on the size. And these paintings, they were selling for $100. The painting, and they used to give a story. The devotee used to go pretending that he is the painter, and he painted it himself. And you know, like a painter in distress, you know, right? And people, you know, naturally in the West, you know, people have a lot of sympathy for the artists. And they started to buy them. Or our devotees started to sell them. For $10 painting, for $100. Then they started the framing also. And then in some zones, they started to sell rugs, you know, the carpet. I mean, they were selling everything, actually. Whatever they could, you know, like accepting meat and alcohol, you know, and cigarettes, they practically started to sell everything. As a result of that, a lot of money started to come in. Now, when the money comes in, then what happens? You spend that money. And so our overhead started to increase. During Prabhupada's time, our setup was very simple. But now, you know, like, it became very complex. And then, you know, as a result of that, you know, the leaders started to deviate. Then the leaders fell down. Gurus fell down. So, and that was the victory of Kali. You know, and at that time, ISKCON actually was devastated. So that problem is still going on. Like, you know, many devotees left, book distribution stopped, and it's my phone. If it's my phone, give it to me. Give it to me.
Sir, Krishna Sachila speaking. Yes, Narada? Yes. 1 second, please.
Who called?
India. India. Ananda Kishore.
Oh, Hare Krishna. Yeah, speaking. Yes, speaking. Yeah, any question?
Now, tell me this painting is possible or especially when there's not enough Lakshmi. Because our temple is mainly the Sharan temple, and it depends how many guests come or not. So sometimes, just to pay the rent, people have to go out and do this painting business, exactly as you said. I don't know.
Yeah, it's natural. You can't really. You see, once you go in the wrong direction, you can't come back straight away. So, you know, like, if we did not make this mistake in the past, then probably ISKCON would have been still going on with book distribution. Right? And don't have any problem. Book distribution means preaching. So preaching and temple maintenance would have gone on side by side. But now that we started to sell books, other things with books, and our overheads have gone up and book distribution gone down. So some, I think, you know, this sort of some temporary arrangements have to be made. Therefore I'm thinking of, you know, like, I was thinking that the projects that I get involved now, I'll make it a point that they're financially viable. You bring in money, not keep on spending money. Just maintain it. So, anyway. But you know, Hare Krishna Maharaj actually started this food prasad distribution program in his own. That's also a better way to bring in Lakshmi. Because prasad is going on, people like it. So it's better than painting. Because this painting in most cases are not Krishna conscious. And if some householder runs the business with the painting, then householders run a business, so householders can have their they keep their, keep some aside, keep some for themselves. Okay then. Suhasini, you go and lie down. Let her lie down for a while. She's really tired. You didn't sleep well last night? Then why are you feeling? Why are you falling asleep? Chant also. Chant also, Subhadra, you have to cut the vegetables. Cut the vegetables, you know, like cauliflower and potatoes in small pieces. And what I say is, cabbage also you can cut in slices, thin slices. Yeah, just these two subjects. That'd be? Then I'll show you how to make it. So I, okay, you'll chant. Balaram, you're falling asleep also. What time did you all go to bed last night?